I wasn't obsessed with like winning the race, but I was obsessed with UTMB as the phenomenon of the race. I just really, really wanted to do it. But it's like, I remember I almost missed the start of the race because I was crying. I had no business being on that starting line. I was just blind to how I was feeling and what state I was in.
This episode is brought to you by UCAN, the UCAN aid station.
Make sure you get your free sample of two of their gels and two of their bars by going to UCAN.com/TRN, and all you pay is shipping, and you get it for free.
The aid station is running low, Scott, and this offer doesn't last forever. So hurry up and get to the aid station and pick up your free offer.
Hey, Don, do you ever want to bring your phone on a training run or a race?
No, Scott. No, I don't.
And I can verify that. He never takes his phone. But if you do, there's a more comfortable way to carry it. Check out our friends at Path Projects. They make running shorts with a 3 or 4 zipper pocket so you can carry your phone, your keys, gels, ID, etc. without things bouncing around when you're running down the trail.
And I see you actually carrying that stuff back there, Scott, that big phone in your back, and doesn't seem to bother you. But these shorts are great for both road and trail, long or short runs.
The Prime Flex material used in most of their shorts is lightweight, it's quick drying, and it's breathable.
Available in classic fit and relaxed fit when you need just a little more extra room in the thighs and the waist. Sometimes that happens.
Depends on how hard you're training. Path Projects also offers baseliners, shirts, headwear. All their gear can be found at pathprojects.com. That's pathprojects.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Trail Runner Nation. And today we have a little bit of a different situation going on here. This is Stephanie Howe, and I'm joined by Anna Frost.
Hi.
And we are taking over from Scott and Don. We decided there was time to have some female influence on this podcast. So we have them tied up in the closet. And we're just going to take over and see how it goes.
So I'm really excited. It's Anna Frost here to join Stephanie Howe on here. If you don't know Stephanie, you should. She has been in ultra trail and mountain running for a really, really long time. And in cross-country running since she was a little tiny girl, even though she hated it. And then she finally realized that actually she should love it because she was so good at it. She is a coach and a nutritionist and a mother of, Julian must be almost 7 months now, Stephanie.
Almost on Saturday. Yeah.
Oh, well, yay. Happy birthday for him. And Stephanie has had all sorts of podiums in UTMB, CCC, San Fran 50, and not only podiums, but a win on Western States in her debut 100 miler. So, you know a little bit about running. I guess we're kind of on the same sort of path, Stephanie. I've also run for a long time. When I was younger, I was a field hockey player, but that transferred into running uphill really well with those big quads you get when you play sports like hockey and squash and tennis, and have gone through mountain, trail, and ultra running, and had lots of highs and lows in ultra, some podiums, some wins, and now going through the hardest one of all, and I think that's been a mother. So we're both on that one. And we're really excited, and I'm super keen to finally connect with Mimi, because I don't think we've ever connected either face-to-face or on a race course. So I'm really excited to talk to you more.
Yeah, so today we are joined by Mimi Kotka, who is a Swedish runner, but living in Chamonix, actually living in Latour, right? You still in Latour?
Very important.
The valley a little bit? Yeah, it's a little quieter up there. And Mimi has been a trail mountain force for the last 4 to 5 years. I think, Mimi, the first time I heard of you was you won CCC in 2016 and just kind of came on the scene and have been a dominating force. And we're really excited to dig into some conversation with you today because you've had a bit of an, I guess, unconventional rise to the top. And at the top, you've also had some highs and lows, which, you know, we're really excited to learn a little bit more about how you've navigated that. But super excited to have you on the podcast today. And yeah, can't wait to dive in. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm just a bit starstruck to be speaking with you because I've been following both you, Steph, and Anna for very long time. So I'm super honored that you invited me for this conversation. And I hope we can discuss some interesting and important stuff today and have a lot of fun as well.
Yeah. So I think, Mimi, what I really love about trail, ultra, mountain running is that everybody always comes into the sport with a unique and interesting reason or challenge or a difference of why they've started trail running and what they did before that. And I know nothing about what you did before trail running. All I see of, you know, on your Instagram, you have these beautiful photos of you running with your gorgeous dog in the beautiful mountains. But what did you do before you were running?
A lot, because I started running when I was almost 30 years old.
So what did you do for those 30 years?
But I actually don't have a background as in sport, in competitive sports at all. But I've all of my life I've been doing outdoor activities and living for the outdoors and just hiking and skiing and being super active. So that I come from the mountains, so to speak, and I've been doing that. I've been a diver and I've been, everything that has to do with just moving in nature and being outside has been, the most, my biggest interest in life. So just a outdoor geek. And I guess when I was getting closer to 30, I started running and I happened to live next to a trail with a beautiful, in a really beautiful forest in Stockholm. And because it's a very green city, I was doing my master thesis in nutrition. I have the same educational background as Stephanie. I just fell in love with trail running. So I've never been a road runner. I've never competed for sports, but I've spent as much time as I possibly can outside. So I'm very comfortable in that element. And then I just happened to, I decided I was going to do, I started running and I thought it was really great. And then I wanted a challenge in my life because I wanted a physical challenge. And in Sweden, we have something called the Swedish Classic. It's a challenge where you, in 1 year, you perform it's a bunch of classic races, one in Nordic skiing. It's the 90K Vasaloppet. And then you ride around the lake. It's 300K. I'm on the metric system here, and I guess so are you, Anna. So you will have to.
I'm getting you here.
Yeah, if we lose the, you will have to convert this in your head.
Go figure it out.
And then you do a 30, as part of this Swedish classic, you do a 30K run. It's called a trail run, but it's not just like a dirt road. So, but I didn't know that back then.
It's still trail.
Yeah, no, it's not trail. So that was the first race of the year. So I started training for that 30K race and just figured I would do this Swedish classic as a life, once in a lifetime thing. It gives you bragging rights in the coffee, on the coffee breaks and stuff. If you're an active person, it's just something a lot of people do in Sweden. But I just, in training for that 30K race, I just fell in love with trail running. And I've never I never got any further than that. I did the 30K race and then it was just, someone told me, oh, there's a race that's 50K that goes on the same trails around here in half a year. Maybe you should do that. And yeah, so the second race I did was 50K. And then from there, yeah, it just spiraled out of control, I guess.
Well, and we should say that first 30K trail race was in 2014, correct?
So no, that was actually earlier, but in 2014 was when I did my first, I decided that I was going to train properly and like become a runner, because it was just, it was more of a side thing. But this other race was a few years earlier, actually. And then we have some years when we were renovating a house, working all the time, and I didn't have time to train, and just for a few years. But in 2014, I decided, I kind of lost my grip on trail running, and then I decided in 2014 that I really loved it and I wanted to become a runner.
Can I just ask, what was your work when you were saying you got too busy working?
So I worked as a nutritionist. Back then I was working.
So you had gone studied.
Yeah. So I have finished, this was a long time ago, but I finished my master's in molecular nutrition. And then I worked, back then, I think I worked, was mixing the years up, but I probably worked as a nutritionist on a study on kids and diabetes type 1.
So Mimi, we've talked a little bit about nutrition because we both geek out on it quite a bit. And your background as a molecular nutritionist is a really amazing combination for yourself as a trail runner to have that background. But you're also a co-founder of Moon Valley, which is organic energy bars. Can you kind of describe that as well?
Yeah, so that's a company that I founded together with Ida Nilsson and Emily Forsberg. They're super impressive athletes, and it's just an idea that sort of grew on us. And after working in the academia, I went more to like product development and maybe more like working with food supplements and stuff, but I always felt like, you know, it's not, my heart is with the real food and stuff. So I always felt like I wanted to do something around that. And I just asked them, figuring they would say no, but they were like, yay, let's do it. And so that's how the idea grew. And, you know, it's a great combination because they are super into food and also have this broad spectrum of like knowledge about ecology, sustainability, and like sports. And it's and we share a lot of values.
And then you've got a beautiful book,
yeah,
out as well now, that you all sort of have your seasons and your chapters of your own expertise and ideas. And you've got some beautiful art from Max Romy in there as well, who's also in your area.
Yeah, so that book is actually quite a good like example of what we're about with the seasons. And for Moon Valley, we had this vision that we wanted to do sports nutrition that was more like food-based, more like the stuff if you made something for yourself at home. I'm super happy about that. And some products are, yeah, really unique. I think we had one of the first like organic sports drinks in the world, and it has like real berry powder instead of aromas and stuff. So that's cool. It's great.
So I think this is really cool, Mimi. And I have tried the chocolate bars, and they are amazing. I'm a chocolate connoisseur, so I can say my taste buds have appreciated them.
I have been to the chocolate factory several times.
I bet you have.
Like dipping my head in the chocolate bowl that they have. It's like, it's great.
I think it's really cool how you took your passion and you kind of carved out this niche for yourself, right? So you were in academia and you were living, I think, in Sweden, and you just decided you wanted to be in the mountains and you wanted to pursue trail running. And you kind of carved out this unique lifestyle for yourself where you're now living in France, in the Alps, and you're working for Moon Valley. You've got this company where you're producing organic food and you're just kind of living the life, you know? And I think that's a really great way to see for people to see that, not that living the life is easy, but for people to see that you really found your passion and you made it happen. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. This is interesting because it's about letting go. The whole family is here. There's three of us. It's my husband and our dog too. And speaking of 2014, we actually made a decision, me and my husband back then, to make big changes in our life because we were stuck with work and house, and you know, the years just kept we kind of felt like the years kept passing us by and that we kind of lost track of our like true passions a bit. So we decided to start simplifying our life to find ways to have more passion. And it's a process. It looks really lovely on Instagram and it looks super easy, but it's taken a long time. You have to let go of perhaps other people's expectations and your own expectations about how things are going to be and just open up your heart. So that's what we did. And I remember because we renovated a house and sold it, and then we rented a house in the Italian Alps for the money we got from that. We had a huge going away party in Sweden. And I remember all the people being at the party saying, oh, you guys, you are so lucky to get to do this. You are so lucky. You're so lucky. You're so lucky. And I remember thinking that, well, every one of you could like potentially do the same thing. You just have to let go. You just have to do it and be prepared to do it. Because, I mean, we kind of felt that you can probably have everything you want in life, but you cannot have everything. It's like, maybe if you want to live in Chamonix, maybe you live in a one-bedroom apartment instead of a big chalet. And I mean, you pick your top five and then you go for those, and then you have to let go of the rest. That's kind of what we did. We have a way more crappy car these days.
Well, and I was going to say, if you're backyard is Chamonix and you have those mountains that you can go and play, and then really you're just coming home to go to sleep because you're so tired from being outside playing all day. So
yeah,
all you need is a tiny little space that has something flat to lay on. So it's a really, I also agree, because you know, when I started racing, I'd left New Zealand with pretty much just the little bag on my back with a tent and a camping stove and a couple of pairs of running shoes, and just went to Europe and took the train from race to race. And again, people said to me, oh, you're so lucky that you get to live this lifestyle. And I said, well, I've got nothing. I have absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
But I have this freedom that I've created because I've, like you said, just let go of that. And it doesn't necessarily have to cost a lot of money, and you don't need a lot of things if you can take from nature those things.
No, I know. But you need to be a bit like brave, I think.
You do. Yeah. You have to be very brave.
Yeah. Take a leap of faith.
I've heard about your going from race to race like years. When it's kind of famous that you just traveled between races.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's extra.
And again, it was being brave, but also being just open to say yes. People offered me to come to they were doing a race next weekend, or they were going that way. And I said, well, I'm going that way too. And, you know, it's trusting in the universe and saying yes to things that pop up, and just having a bit of trust and excitement for what could happen. I always like to say it's like an open door of opportunity. you just step through, you just take that step. And if it works well, it works well. And if it doesn't work well, you jump on out and you go through a different one, but you won't know unless you go.
Yeah, that's true.
So Mimi, first of all, before we get into a little bit more about, you know, what you've gone through in the past couple of years, I want to say congratulations on your recent third place finish at Lavaredo. That's quite an amazing race. Yes. And it sounds like you had a great experience there. Totally just a beautiful race course and a really tough race. So congratulations on that podium finish there.
Yeah, thank you. I sprinted with Asara for the third position. So just lovely. I just wanted to do like my own race and finish a freaking ultra trail race and finish it feeling good and strong. So I achieved my goals. I'm just super happy. And I mean it's a beautiful course. One of those mythical places that you can sort of draw energy from. I always feel like those kinds of races are the ones that I do best in, because it's just you can kind of, there's almost a, like we when you pass the Trecime, the UNESCO World Heritage, at the break of dawn, the ladies, it's just like the energies, it's almost out of this world. So super beautiful race and great food. Great food, it's Italy, so doesn't get any better.
That's always a plus.
Yes.
So I think, you know, I'm really happy that you're having success and you're feeling good again. But I want to kind of bring you back to 2018, because it seems like that's, you've been pretty vocal about what you experienced and what you went through with Red S, which we'll talk a little bit about. But in 2018, you had a really stacked year. You had a bunch of first place finishes at big races, and then I remember in August leading up to UTMB, I think we went for a run on my birthday and you had some broken fingers.
Yeah.
And I think you broke them at the Mont Blanc 90K just a month before, maybe. Yeah. And you were kind of nursing those fingers, and then you had a knee thing, and you still attempted the race. And unfortunately had a DNF. You were probably the favorite going into the race. And then from there, you went and did two more big races. You did the Diagonal des Fous, I believe, and finished.
Yes.
That's a gnarly, gnarly race.
Yes.
And then Ultra Trail Cape Town.
But I wasn't healthy.
Yes. And then capped it off with Ultra Trail Cape Town, which is another big race. And after that, it sounds like you really started to feel the impact of that year. It caught up to you. So I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit and what you went through.
I've had time to reflect on 2018 for sure. If we're gonna, when we get into this discussions about Red S, I'm still like in the process of learning and figuring everything out. But I think for me, it's definitely what happened. I in 2018. I had good racing in 2017. And then I had a tough winter of like a lot of schemo training in tough environments and an early start to the season. And I did three ultra races in 3 months. I did the Madeira Island Ultra Trail, finished first there. And then I did the Maxi Race XL course. Did well there too. And then I was one of my favorite races is the Marathon Mont Blanc 90K. So I really like, that was one of my big goals for the year. And I really like gave my heart to that race, and I raced my heart out, and I was probably very tired, and I fell a few times. I injured my knee and I broke two fingers in the race, and I think my body was probably already then quite empty. So looking back with those injuries, what I should have done is pull the plug and nurse those injuries. But I didn't. It was like 8 weeks out to UTMB, which was kind of an obsession for me as well. And I remember my husband saying, he's like, you need to go to the hospital. I mean, your fingers are like pointing in the wrong direction and your knee, it's not good. And I was like, yes, but I'll do it after UTMB. It's like, not now. We're going to altitude. I'm going to do big volume weeks up here. Hey. And I just remember I couldn't sleep. I was in so much pain. And these fingers, they just never healed. And I think that's, looking back at it, as you girls know, it takes a lot of energy from the body to heal broken bones and to heal soft tissue as well, which I had in my knee. I had a tear in my knee. And I was also at altitude, which isn't exactly helping. So I think that the period after Marathon Mont Blanc, it really, it pushed me into a black hole physically.
Can I just ask in there, why? Why did you keep doing, you know, you did three ultras in 3 months. Why did you have to keep going? Was it you? Was it sponsors? Was it, you know, why could you not just let go? Why could you not just say, my fingers are pointing in the wrong direction, I need to just let go for a second?
Well, I don't know. I was kind of obsessed with the UTMB thing. I had raced CCC and TDS years before, and I wasn't obsessed with like winning the race, but I was obsessed with UTMB as the phenomenon of the race. I felt like I didn't know how many chances I would have to race it, and I was in really good shape, and I just really, really wanted to do it. But it's like, I remember I almost missed the start of the race because I was crying. And my husband was like, you don't have to do it. It was like half an hour before starting. My husband, he's like, please don't do this. And I was like, I have to. And then it's just all. I had no business being on that starting line. I just, looking back at it, I think I was just like blind to how I was feeling, which is very good. You have to have, it's a good personality trait if you're an ultra runner, right?
Right.
To kind of be able to suffer and just don't care about it. But it's just, yeah, I think I was just blind to how I was feeling and what state I was in.
And I think that's hard when you're a new-ish ultra runner, right?
Yes.
You have only been in the sport for 4 to 5 years, and you had some pretty good success early on. And so you're testing, you're pushing your body, you're trying to see how far you can get. And when you said you did well in CCC and TDS, you won both of those races. So you did very well.
Yeah.
And going into UTMB, you know, I know that energy of that race, and I don't fault you for just being kind of confused and trying to see if you can get one more out. I think when you've been in ultra running for a long time, you kind of know and respect the time it takes to recover from these races. When you're new, it's this unknown. And I know Anna and I have both had, we've learned the hard way experiences where, you know, our bodies have forced us to take a rest, whether we wanted to or not. And Mimi, you just went through that. And it's really great to see you talk about it and come out the other side and be feeling good and strong again.
Hey, so Stephanie, I was just wondering if you could define REDS or RED S or RED-S. What is it?
Yeah, so it used to be called the female athlete triad, and it refers to a condition. It stands for relative energy deficiency in sport, and it refers to a condition where there's a chronic suppression of energy intake or a just chronic low energy availability. And that's a problem because over time, that can do things to the body like decrease performance, increase your risk of injury and illness, and to a more extreme end of the spectrum in female athletes, leads to the loss of the menstrual cycle and then decreased bone mineral density. And we see this cluster of symptoms happen a lot. They kind of coexist together, and it's just this big snowball effect that leads to just a lot of long-term health consequences.
So what sort of symptoms might someone have?
So one of the first symptoms is just feeling that chronic fatigue, like just not, you know, can be out in training, just many days in a row of just low energy, or just not feeling like you're able to run the same paces or the same effort that you used to. That's kind of the first sign. And continuing to push through that, then there might be things like mood disturbances. So just feeling like cranky, feeling a little bit like, I like to call it hangry, like when you're hungry, low blood glucose, and you just get really irritable. That's kind of at the very beginnings. As you get further into it, definitely decreased performance, and then loss of the menstrual cycle. So females were lucky in the way that we have a regular menstrual cycle to let us know when our body's functioning. Males don't really have that sign. But for females, when you lose a period, that's kind of like a yellow flag of like, okay, what's going on? Having two missed periods, that's, for me, when I work with athletes, assigned to like slow it down. We need to like stop this train in its tracks. And if you miss more than 2 to 3, then it's kind of like becomes an even bigger issue with more underlying implications with hormonal disturbances and even more potential for long-term health consequences.
But this is something that men can get also, and they might have symptoms like weight loss or muscle loss or even something like stress fractures?
Yep, absolutely. And definitely they can have weight loss, changes in body composition, but they can also have weight gain, which is kind of like a weird, like it doesn't make a lot of sense. But what happens is your metabolism starts to decrease to try to protect and preserve the energy that it's getting. And that can lead to actually feeling bloated and actual physical weight gain. And in turn, the normal like thing that people do is then to consume less or train more, and that just makes it worse and worse. But it's definitely not limited to female athletes, and that's why the name part of the reason why the name changed from the female athlete triad to Red S, because it's not just prevalent in female runners; it's actually in male athletes as well.
So where do you go to get it diagnosed? How do you know that you actually do have Red S?
So that's tricky because there's many different components. And so the first thing, you know, you can do a blood test and be tracking your numbers over time, and that can be an indication. But the first thing is to just work with a coach or a nutritionist, dietitian who can help you just kind of balance things out again. And the problem a lot of athletes have is that the energy expenditure in trail and ultra running is so high that it's hard to consume enough to meet those needs. So an athlete can say, look, I eat 3,000 calories a day. I'm constantly eating, but their energy expenditure is so great from those 20 to 30 kilometer runs that they're doing day after day after day, that just that cumulative just mismatch of energy intake and energy expenditure can just put them in a state of just chronic low energy availability. So working with a sport nutritionist is a really great way to start to get back into understanding what the body needs and how to avoid that situation. Or if you're in that situation, how to work back from it. It takes time. It's not easy. And, you know, there's a lot of resources out there, but you have to know where to go, where to find the right one. So working with a coach can be helpful as long as they're well versed in knowing what's appropriate training, because there's a lot of coaches out there, right? So working with someone who knows how to write in enough rest and recovery for your individual body. And then also finding a good physician or just, you know, doctor of some sorts who, again, knows the female body, knows what it's like to be a runner and understands the overlap. Because a lot of times, if you just see, you know, your regular primary care physician, they're going to just say, stop running. And that's not a thing. And you know, you have to work with the athlete and meet them where they're at. But I think this is something we don't want to ignore. We don't want to just like put our heads down and grind through, because it can have such just detrimental consequences in terms of stress fractures, fall fractures, infertility in both males and females, and just, you know, long-term like chronic fatigue that can take years and years to get out of.
So you don't necessarily have to stop running. Maybe you need to slow it down a little bit, but you definitely need to increase your calorie intake. Is there some easy ways, just, you know, maybe if you've had your lunch, like what else could you have just to top up that calorie intake?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't have to stop running as long as you're not injured. I think running and being active is a good way to keep your body balanced. That said, you do need to start replacing with more energy. And some good ways to do that are to not treat your body like a calculator. And what I mean by that is on rest days, oftentimes an athlete will be like, well, I didn't run today, so I don't need to eat as much, despite their hunger might be through the roof because they did a long run yesterday. So think of it as like, that is your recovery or rest day, is a day that you just get to replenish. Like everything you take in is just going to repair and recover so that the next day you're ready to go. So I think trying to maintain intake, just regardless of what you did for activity, that's one really good way. One other tip and trick that I like to tell people is to have a snack before bed, and getting something with a little bit of protein, preferably whey protein if you're able to have that type of protein, like yogurt or even ice cream. I have ice cream most nights, and don't take away from this that Stephanie just said to eat ice cream, because that's, you know, there's context for this, but having a snack before bed is one of the best ways that you can just kind of repair your body overnight and just get in a little bit extra energy.
Awesome. Well, Mimi's going to tell us a little bit more about her journey through, well, in one way and out the other side of Reds.
As a reflection, I don't know of, I would have problem naming any high-performing ultra trail female runner that has not crashed.
I mean, and it's not just females, it's males as well, you know.
No, yes. I think they have, hormonally, they might have a bit more lead time. Right. I mean, they can buy some more time, but it's still, I mean, it's kind of a path of wrecked bodies. And I think it's the combination of the toughness of the sport and the toughness of the minds of the people doing it. So it's just like, but to me, it's like it felt honest, and I just to talk about it and just not disappear in the shadows like all the heroines I have sort of done, but to actually like perhaps try and be a bit more open and reflect on it so that it can hopefully change. So,
and what I found, you know, as another reason why, you know, because I also went through the same thing. I was also asked, well, why did you keep doing it when you knew that you were going in this dark hole, you know, down this spiral? For me, one of the reasons was that there was these races all around the world offering me to come to these races. And, you know, you went to Madeira, you're in the Alps, there's, you know, races all over Europe that are stunning, and you have all of these opportunities with sponsors and with race series. And, you know, when someone says, do you want to come to Madeira and run across this stunning island? Well, it's really hard to say no when you love the outdoors and you love to travel and you love to race and you love to push yourself. And I think that was a really hard part for me, and possibly for you, when you're getting these options to go to La Reunion and to go to, you know, South Africa. Was the travel a really big incentive for you as well to see all these amazing places?
Well, Diagonal de Fou, which is the proper name for that race.
Yeah, which means in English, the crossing of the crazies.
Yes, exactly. Which is so true.
Yeah.
No, but that one was just, I felt like I had failed myself so badly. So I'm like, okay, if you didn't do this UTMB race, then let's see if we can find a 100-miler that's worse. Oh, yes, there is one. It's called Diagonal de Fou. Let's go.
Oh, it sounds perfect.
So I was kind of looking at it as a vaccination for UTMB. I'm like, well, it's going to be worse. So after this, I will be able to handle it just fine.
Right.
So that's the actual reason. And also, I mean, it's a cool race. So I just wanted to be sure it wasn't because I was not mentally able to handle the distance, but I mean, yeah, I behaved really stupidly. Yeah. And I think I had absolutely no business being in South Africa, but that was a bit more of a dream. As you said, Anna, it's a dream place and a lovely opportunity to see something that you probably would never be able to see anyway. So that was otherwise, so that was just a cool race as well.
A place that fills you with a lot of gratitude.
Yeah,
right?
And yeah, but yeah, and after that, just it's been a journey
so
for sure.
How, you know, you've taken kind of from 2018, you know, you took a big break to sort of, I guess, approach to yourself that you were not feeling well, that you needed a break, that you needed to do some work on you. Did that mean like no running, no biking, no core strength, just eating well, resting, putting your feet up a wall, or did you continue doing that at a different level? What did you do? Or what did you not do?
I just kept on going, and I trained like a crazy person in the winter of 2019 as well. And I just, you know, for Red S, there's a lot of you can see on a blood sample that the person isn't healthy. I mean my blood works were like a Christmas tree. It was just like everything was just red. I was, yeah, everything was terrible. We can go through the details on that before, but I just kept going. Finally, the Quartz program at the World Ultra World Tour, they said I couldn't race because I had such bad blood values.
Oh, right.
I was planned on doing races in 2019. I managed to get my iron levels up a bit. It was all about, everyone was kind of telling me it was the training load and stuff, but really, I don't think I overtrained at all. I just underfueled and had, because I did so much like testing with different type modalities of training. So that wasn't really the problem. It was just I was in such a broken down place, body wise and metabolic, that I couldn't do it. And I mean it. The scary thing is that you can push in training, and I mean, time trials got better and better. I could, like, on paper, I looked more fit. But when you go to an ultra race, that's when it shows, mm-hmm. right? Because then you need to have those deep energy levels, and those can only be accessed if you're healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of when it shows, I mean, 10 hours into a race, that's when you need to be healthy to be able to perform. So I think that's, I just kept failing in races because I could not, my body was just not, it could not do it. So I couldn't get any energy in, and I couldn't, it was just like the last gears were missing, which they were probably.
So did you take a break after after 2019, you took a break and just ate a lot of food. How did you regain that energy?
Well, no. I just kept going. Yes, I took a break.
Okay, good.
Yes. In August 2020,
okay.
That's when I took a break because I just, it wasn't working and I just was so, my body was just completely like empty and I just finally woke up and I had started to, because you have all these symptoms and I have started to like read up on the science and actually, because I don't have, a sports nutrition background. I know everything there is to know about omega-3s and whatever and nutrient density and stuff, but the very specific sports nutrition knowledge, I mean, I needed to start to take that one in, which I'm doing a certification for the Olympic Committee. I think you have that one too, Stephanie, the sports nutrition certification, and it's actually to know what I'm talking about. So I'm halfway through that now. So I started like changing. It was actually by starting to read up on the science and starting to come across this like concept of energy deficiency. And then I sat down and did the math on myself. Like the actual 1+1 calories in, calories out expenditure stuff, which I've never done. And I realized, you've been short on like 1,000 calories a day, probably unintentional because I don't have any issues with eating. I freaking love to eat. But I mean, just for 3 years. And then I took a break. You know, in August 2020.
And Mimi, I think, you know, it's being a little hard on yourself. It is tough to coach yourself, or it is tough to tell yourself what you need to eat. I know I can tell anyone else what they need to eat, but when it comes to myself, it's really hard sometimes. So I think you can get caught up in that of maybe even knowing what you need, but not being able to apply it to yourself. And the red S, what we've been referring to, is relative energy deficiency in sport.
Yeah.
And it's fairly well known now, but it happens a lot in ultra running, just from what you were saying, Mimi, because the output is so high. You can eat a lot of food and feel like you're resting, but because the energy expenditure is so high, you need even more than what we really realize. And from a female perspective, that's especially true. So oftentimes it's not overtraining, but it's under recovering and under fueling, and not necessarily on purpose, but just because your energy output is so high.
Yeah, and I can sort of see how it snuck up on me, because the way I was eating, I have a very relaxed relationship with food, but I mean, I like to eat healthy food, and the way I was eating was perfect for a person that was running in perhaps more of a flat Scandinavian environment, training 10 hours a week. But then as the mileage and training load kept like creeping up during the years, and also, like you said, with the recovery after races and injuries, and it's just, I mean, this environment, it will eat a lot from you as well, and especially like the winter training
and the altitude.
I mean, I don't know how you're supposed to sustain yourself. Yeah, and the altitude. And for a couple of years, it just kept, the output kept becoming bigger and bigger. And I just didn't compute in my head that you need to eat like two grown-up people now, because you go through so much energy. So I think that's I had good intentions, but I just didn't realize how much energy that was needed.
Are you more intentional now about your fueling, because you know that you need more?
Yes, for sure. And I did that. I actually put myself on This might be helpful as well. So what I did was in August, I decided to take a break, and I also got really good help from an endocrinologist that specializes in this, which is very rare. So I was lucky to have her, and she was just so incredibly helpful, because you need to have someone that knows what they're talking about when it comes to looking at your blood values and stuff, because this kind of condition, it's a diagnosis of exclusion. You need to exclude other problems as well, so you don't have some other underlying diseases and stuff. But she was very helpful, and she just had this amazing rest and eat approach, and a really natural way of approaching it, and positive way. And we made a plan, and because I'm a nutritionist, I sort of could do food logs and calculations for myself. So that's what I did for a couple of months. I just logged all my food and made sure that I ate enough calories, which is not easy to do if you're not experienced. So I wouldn't recommend it, and I would certainly not recommend it to someone who's not super relaxed with their relationship with food, because it can also become an obsession if you have those kind of issues as well. So, but for me, it was a really good solution just to relearn. And get new habits around eating, and just healthy ways of eating, like avoiding fasted training, always having breakfast, always fueling around training, and so on. So,
what is your advice, to people that maybe do have, and maybe this is to Stephanie as well, being not just a female, being a runner, no matter what running, short distance, long distance, just running in general, there's a fine line, when you're light, you're faster. When you're not carrying extra fat, you're faster. And we all have different body types. Some of us carry more muscle. Some of us are lean beans. But typically, ultra runners, the podium runners, any runner, the people even at the back, if you're carrying extra weight, it's harder on your joints, it's harder on your body, it's harder on your heart. And so we get in our mindset, if we could just lose a little bit more weight, maybe we'll go a little bit faster, or it'll be a little bit easier on our body. And that's when this obsession starts, and you get a little bit lighter and a little bit lighter and a little bit lighter, and all of a sudden you've got this unhealthy relationship to food. So what's your advice, Stephanie or Mimi, on how do you count those calories and make sure that you're eating enough without having an unhealthy relationship to counting calories?
I kind of agree and I kind of disagree, because when I look at the podium at an ultra trail race and at the finishes, wherever you are in the field, I see all body types. So that's actually, for me, not coming from a track and field background and being more of I should probably have done velodrome biking or CrossFit or something if I would have been interested. But for me, this is part of the beauty of this sport, that I really feel that all body types are welcome in ultra running. Because I don't see one type of body. Maybe if you see a marathon race, you will see the finishers. There is one body type that's obviously optimized for running a super fast marathon, but not in this world. So I've never felt, I don't really think that's the way. If you have that in your head, I think that's, first of all, that's the wrong idea.
I'm not saying so much body types. I agree. Yeah. There is very, look at Stephanie and me. I'm half the height of Stephanie. And her, her arms, her legs are like my arms. They're these long gazelle legs. They're beautiful long arms. And my little legs are like little tree trunks. So I'm actually not saying, body types. I'm saying each body's weight for your shape.
Yeah, okay, you mean like that, yes.
I don't know if you even have an answer. I'm just saying, you know, there is a lot of runners, like you say, that disappear because they've got reds or, it used to be called fats, which is, you know, male and female specific. Now reds is, yeah, you know, very broad.
My reflection from my perspective would be, because I don't have, I think actually for me, it's been a bit of a masking thing in this, that I have a very muscle. I have a lot of muscle on my body. That's my body type. And the only thing that happens if I lose weight is that I lose weight in my arms, like 1 kilo. I look the way I look, but that's actually probably masked my red S because I was very low in fat percentage.
Right.
But super normal weight. I was like 70 kilos and then maybe 69 in race season. And that's super normal. It's like mid-range BMI. But when you look at pictures and stuff, I mean, the body fat was probably, it was too low to sustain hormonal health for sure. And I mean, so... it's a line. I mean, it's like you said, if you have a low percentage of body fat, especially as a female, it might give you one raise, maybe two, but then you start to pay the hormonal price for that. And in the end, it's catastrophic to your performance. So it's just, there is no link between like being light and performance, not in the long run. There is just no proof of that. That's like a myth that we tell ourselves. There is like no, the people, I think the people that last the longest in this sport are the ones that can sustain a certain body type for a long time.
Yeah, I think you really just nailed it there with, in ultra running, you have to have enough reserves. You have to have enough fat. In shorter, like track and field races, you can get away with it a lot longer than you can in ultra running. And yeah, maybe you'll have a couple good races, but then the wheels come off and things just really fall apart. And I think taking an individual approach of like, what is my body and how is it healthy? Because Mimi, as you just said, you had a healthy weight according to averages and a healthy BMI, but that doesn't mean that your body was healthy. So taking an individual approach and knowing that actually you're just very, very lean and you're very muscular. And if you're not having a normal menstrual cycle, that's a sign, that's a big yellow red light, yeah, that you need to slow down or you need to take a break, because females are lucky in that way. Males don't have that sign. We know if we're not having a regular cycle that there's something wrong.
But Stephanie, so many people now have contraception and you know, those contraception methods, you don't have a natural period. You're not on your natural cycle. So you're like, oh, thank goodness I'm not having a period this month. Great. I'm not going to have a period during race day, but you don't know, like, are you just not having it because you're on contraception, or are you not having it because you've gone into the reds already and you don't know what happens then? How can we make sure we don't get to that point?
That makes it trickier for sure. And I think, you know, that's a good reason to not use contraception for getting your period, because a lot of doctors will prescribe it for females to like have enough estrogen so their bones stay healthy, but it masks the problem. I think the best way to avoid that is something that we talked about a little bit, which Mimi, you said you have a good relationship with food. That's super important. So healing our relationship with food and knowing that it should be enjoyable and you need food to fuel not just the activity that you're doing, but the recovery and to keep your body alive. And Mimi, you were fortunate to be able to do this sort of with your endocrinologist and then your nutrition background. But for just the average person, I think the best thing to do is to find someone to work with.
Oh, for sure.
Who isn't just going to give you like a calculation. Yeah, but just help you understand why you need food and like how to fuel your body and how to repair that relationship to avoid going down this path.
And I had started doing that, Stephanie, because I don't have, you know, especially when I was traveling so much, I don't have a nutritionist or a doctor that I can go to regularly. So I started just doing, going in for just a full blood count every 3 months. Because, you know, period or not, contraception or not, food intake, race, your bloods don't lie, you know, and
right.
once you, and you need to get the results. So you get your bloods taken, you take the results, and even if it says normal, you can put it up against what happens in 3 months' time. You know, your levels might say normal, but actually for you, they're low. Actually for you, they're high, whatever. So having that own little bank of blood results every 3 months, it can be such an asset for you. And it's maybe the only way that you can make sure that you're taking in enough calories without getting that obsessive, compulsive approach to like, I need these calories in. No, well, every 3 months, get that test. Am I, you know, on top of this? And if not, then, you know, you need to eat more than you have been.
Yeah, I think that's great to have like an N of one and keep track of your own health.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess that's, and also if you have, but like we were saying, this could be very like, just because it can be really unintentional, but if you feel like you have perhaps disordered behavior around food, disordered eating, or eating even a full-blown eating disorder, then that's the number one thing to address. And that mm-hmm. requires yeah. a different skill set than seeing a nutritionist, I would say, mm-hmm. or a dietitian. Then you might need to address that, because if that's in the way, then you will never succeed in, like, you will never succeed in recovering or managing this in a good way if you're in the risk zone. I don't even know if that's an English word. Well,
we get what you mean.
But so that's number one priority. If you have, you have to be honest with yourself about that, because then that needs to be fixed first. I think that's also a thing when you speak to other ultra runners, and especially maybe females. Everyone is like talking about their shitty blood work. Oh, I'm anemic and my thyroid is shit and this and that, and my immune system is down and I have gut issues and whatever. And I just, and then you hear about all this, like you fix one thing, but I try to see that's the approach that's really been helpful for me with Redis. Instead of perhaps, it's never been suggested, but perhaps of like fixing one thing with a medication or something, I see red as a, like a bucket with perhaps 10 holes that's leaking out. And if you plug one hole with an iron injection, or you get on some medication that will help your thyroid or whatever, that's fine. But you plug one hole, that only means there will pour out more water from the other 9 holes.
Right.
So you need to sort of fix the bucket, and that's mainly like taking care of your energy intake and balancing your recovery, like you said, Stephanie. So I think that's also something that's really important to remember, that if you're just like addressing one of these things and you have this problem, I mean, you can have just one hole in your bucket, I'm sure, but if you have all 10 of them, I mean, you're only buying yourself some time, and you will probably be worse off after a period of time if you don't address the root cause for the problem.
That's a really good way to summarize it, and a really good analogy that I think we can all understand.
Yeah, it is.
I want to ask you a little bit lighter question. We had a visit from your dog, Enzo. And I know he's been a big part of your life and a big training partner for you. So tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, it's my first dog. I've never had a dog before. So, and he's 5 years old now, and he's Italian. We got him in Italy 5 years ago. My brother and his family was visiting, and we're were watching, like the Italian, it's called Craigslist in the US, I think, like, you know, the we were just looking at puppies, and there were some puppies, and my brother said, oh, let's go and see them. You don't have to have to bring one home. But
that's not a thing.
Obviously, that's what you do. No, we would have taken all six if we had the chance. It's like, okay, how many can we fit in the car? Six puppies. Okay, let's go. So, no, but he's a very special training partner for sure. He's a true mountain dog. He's kind of mellowing out now, and he's not doing super long stuff, especially not in the summer, but we do the doggy trot every morning.
So you go out for a run with him in the morning and then carry on running after you've dropped him back at home?
No, usually I don't run that long in the morning, and I wouldn't even call it running. I would say trotting with lots of stops is probably more like a better description. No, but he's such a joy to run with, and I wasn't prepared for the special bond you form with a dog. It's special, and especially for us, since we spend so much time, and you know that outdoor dogs, they become really happy, so they're the best buddies you can have.
We really like following along with your adventures and your photos with Enzo on Instagram. It looks like you guys visit some really beautiful places.
Oh, if it was up to me, I would only post pictures of him.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, Mimi, on your Instagram, it's there's beautiful photos of you running with Enzo. Have you got your own personal photographer that chases you around everywhere?
Yes, I do.
Perfect. And who is that?
Yeah, so my husband takes all the nice pictures. The ugly ones are probably mine. That's how it works.
Okay. And I was told I need to ask you, how did you meet your husband, Tony?
Oh, who?
I think Doug requested that. I've heard this story. It's a good one.
Yeah, so I met my husband at a nightclub in Croatia called The Grotto.
Nice.
And it's quite a long time ago now, but there are picture proofs from the evening. But it was me and three other blonde Scandinavian single girls. We were like island hopping in Croatia. We were having a great time.
Of course you were.
Yes. And then we got to this island and we took a cab, and the guy who drove the cab, he said, oh, you look like nice girls. You should not go to a place called The Grotto. It's a club, and it's not for nice girls, and you shouldn't go there. And we're like, okay, mom. Okay, where is this place? We're definitely going this evening.
Sounds perfect for us.
So, yeah, we're going there. You know how it is. There was a couple of, because my husband is Swedish, and you hear the same language, you would do the same, right? You start speaking with your fellow persons, and we started talking in this nightclub. If you could talk, it was very loud music. It was a spectacular place. It was like a natural grotto. It was super dangerous because it was like a steep cliff just going right down to the sea, and then this grotto with some gnarly stairs going up to the club, like no security at all, and just some sort of DJ and the long bar in there. It was very like Mediterranean. And that's where we met. And then I was off to Slovenia to teach at the public health school. And he went back to Sweden. And then we met in Sweden, and he proposed to me a few months later. That's the story.
Oh, what a sweet story.
Yeah. But he didn't know. He obviously didn't know what he was getting himself into. But he kind of grew into it.
Well, Mimi, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. And
thank you, guys.
Yeah, it was great to kind of dive into you know, the journey you've been on the past couple of years, and to talk a little bit more about how you've navigated through all of that. I think it's super helpful for us on the other side. Yeah, just to see and hear from you and learn from you, and also just continue to watch you come back. And you know, if Lavaredo is any indication of how you're doing right now, you're on a good trajectory. So we hope to see more of you on the trails. And do you have any races coming up later this summer?
Well, I'm doing UTMB. And I will continue to do UTMB until I feel like I made myself proud. And I have 7 more years, because my husband said I could have 10. And then I have to start to think about maybe doing something else.
Okay, nice.
You and I are on the same page.
Yeah.
Same page with that. I keep coming back until I have a good race.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened yet.
Steph, I will see you here. We will go for a run.
Yes.
I think we might, I mean, in 7 years, if we haven't made ourselves proud by then, we could probably renegotiate that deal as well. So no worries.
And Mimi, if you know, you feel comfortable, I think you sharing your journey from your recovery back from Reds back into racing, you know, your passion, if you're comfortable sharing that journey, it's a really amazing education to share out there, because, you know, we need it. Everybody needs it. We need that honesty and genuine conversation on social media, because it's, you know, it's the devil. It's a love-hate relationship for all of us, I'm sure. And it's so important that we do share these journeys, because we all go through them one way or another. So if you're able to share that, then, you know, I know that a lot of the trail running community would really appreciate that. And also, you know, if people want to come running with you, they just need to come to Chamonix and they'll find you out there with the dog, right?
Yes, for sure.
And they can also join the Run the Alps. You do a trail running camp with Run the Alps. So that's a really good way to come with you. And
yes, in September. I will be beaten up from UTMB, so I will be the slowest one in the camp for sure.
Perfect.
But I really, it's like this. We have me and the Run the Alps crew and some awesome friends here like Hilary Girardi and Meg McKenzie and stuff. We have like our best routes planned out, and it's, yeah, that's going to be a really nice trip with Run the Alps for sure.
So Mimi, if people want to follow you and find where you are and learn about you even more, where can they go?
For me, it's my it's Instagram, probably at Mimi Kotka. And then the Moon Valley stuff is Moon Valley Me on social media as well. The organic sports nutrition, and the epic trip is Run the Alps. So that's 3 good ones for you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Mimi.
Anna, I wanted to ask you just a little bit more about your coaching and where people can find you and learn more about all the things you do.
Yeah, it's quite fun being an athlete, because then you do have those rest days to actually do other things. And I've always wanted to coach, but I've never really had the time. I went through university and did physical education degree, and in that was my coaching degree, coaching and teaching. And so this year sort of seemed like a perfect opportunity to do that, and it's something that I have had absolutely so much fun doing. And I've had such a diverse group of athletes already, not just athletes, but people who are want to walk as far as they can walk, people that have at 5k running and want to do a 50k. So it's been so, so interesting and so fun. And that's my Frosty's Footsteps coaching. And you can find that on my website, which is frostysfootsteps.com, or on all my social media channels. And another part of, I guess, sort of the coaching, but it's guiding. My husband and I started our little business called Trail Run Adventures, which with COVID sort of went to ground zero, obviously, with the travel restrictions around the world. But we're taking those little steps up and up and up again. And we've got a few trips coming up in Colorado, one in Telluride, and then one run, hike, yoga retreat also in the San Juan Mountains of Colorado. And that's, another passion of mine, to be able to take people to these places that I'm absolutely in love with and just see their faces when they also appreciate the mountains just as I do. And I get just as much of a thrill out of that as I do when I'm there on my own. So that's something that's been really fun for us to create and design and get excited about the international travel again, hopefully for the world. Later on in the year, we have a trip in Madeira, which is a Portuguese island. We have another trip in Bhutan in the Himalayas, which is probably one of my most favorite trips in the world. You basically hike into the middle of nowhere for 10 days and come out the other side pretty enlightened, pretty grateful, and pretty hungry as well because you've been at such high altitude. That's where I am. I also do a little bit of jewelry, and that's just a little hobby, and sometimes I put some of my latest, inspirations online, and so they're on my website as well. Go to trailrunadventures.com. You'll find all of the different destinations there, and hopefully they're updated for the new trips coming out COVID-free.
Sounds pretty fun. And I like that you pair those. There's a lot of different things going on at those camps, and I like the yoga. If anyone's followed you over the years, you've seen that yoga has been a big part of your life, and really great to bring that into the camps as well.
Yeah, most of our camps, all of our camps are not about performance. They're not about distance or how fast or, you know, how hard can you run. It's about appreciating where you are and what that country or area has to offer. So, you know, for example, our Madeira trip, we go canyoning, we go surfing, we do wine tasting, we eat Portuguese cuisine every night. And what we definitely do every single run is stop and take photos and eat lunch and have snacks and talk and stop and take photos. So we spend all day out there enjoying everything about where we are. So Stephanie, I know that you have just as much, if not even more, going on. You're a nutritionist, you're a coach, you're a mom, you've also doing camps as well. So talk me through all of those. Where can we find you?
So I'm pretty active on Instagram, Stephanie Marie Howe, and I post a lot of the fun things that I'm doing. I do a lot of random just presentations, talks on nutrition and coaching, and a lot of that is overlap and really my passion. So that's a good place to start. My website is Stephanie Marie Howe, and I do coaching and nutrition. Again, I really love blending both of those, and I work with athletes of all abilities, from high school up to, I have a 71-year-old that I'm coaching right now, and everyone in between, new to trail running, seasoned experts. I really love the whole spectrum. And the nutrition is very similar. I like to work with people with different goals. It keeps me on my toes, and every person's a little bit different. So I take a really individualized approach to, you know, what is this person's background? What are their goals? What is their lifestyle? And really work with them on a week-to-week basis of changing their fueling habits to meet their goals. And with nutrition, it takes a long time to establish lifestyle habits, and accountability is the most important thing. And I love that. I love connecting with someone and helping them to learn how to eat for lifelong health, not just give them like a quick fix of like, you know, just eat this, follow this diet, because that doesn't work. So part of it is repairing the relationship with food and getting them to understand that it should be an enjoyable experience. And eating doesn't have to be complex when you learn how to do it correctly. And it's really fun for me to teach people that, because it really is my passion. So if you're interested in either of those, you can contact me through my website. I would love to work with you. And then I'm also doing camps through a company that is called Threshold Expeditions. And it's four women who founded this company. And we're a little bit different. We try to set ourselves, I guess, differentiate ourselves from other camps by the, I guess, the experience is more of a luxury experience, where we're going to be staying in really nice places and having really good food. And it's more about the experience, being in a beautiful place. Yes, we're going to run, but the run isn't the focus. This isn't for someone who wants to go do a training camp and put their head down and grind out miles. This is for someone who wants to go to a beautiful place, stay in a really nice location, and have really good food and experiences. So our first camp is slotted to be this fall in Santa Fe. And we'll see. We've had to reschedule it because of COVID. So we started this company when COVID hit. So it's been a really interesting process. But we're trying to run a few every year in some beautiful places around the country. So check out the thresholdexpeditions.com. We have a blog and we have a newsletter you can sign up for. Love to see you on the camp list.
So Scott and Don are yelling from the closet, and they want us to say, "Run, Moss!"
It's the end of the show, and we would be amiss if we didn't thank a few people. First of all, the listener. Thank you for making it to the end of the podcast. We knew it was probably harder than running 50 miles, but we're grateful to you. We're grateful to our Patreon supporters. We need to talk about the Cocopelli 1000, which is coming up. Those Patreon supporters have bibs. They're waiting to learn more about that. We want to give special thanks to our business Patreon member, Doug Crumley, with Ameriprise.
Think of Doug as your pacer or crew for your finances, because he will take care of you.
You can find him at Doug Crumley Jr., DougCrumleyJr.com. If you want to become a Patreon supporter, go to trailrunnernation.com and click on the support us at the top of the screen.
We need to thank our producer, Doug Mayer, who helps put this thing together and gives us some direction. And importantly, sound man Ryan, who really makes sure that, well, we sound like we're doing our job, Scott. Without him, it would be chaotic.
Tune in next week for another episode. Thank you.